Welcome to the Deck 4 podcast. You can access episodes, companion articles, research notes and links, as well as information about our contributors and supporters at deck4podcast.com. Hope you enjoy the program. Okay, so let's begin with the nearest faraway place. Gary, what set this apart as something special in terms of a rock and roll biography?
The research. I think I already tried to punch it up in my review that Timothy White went above and beyond. His research was staggering, and I think that you can do research just for the sake of research, but it served to promote his overall theme of the book, which was much to do with the westward migration of people from the Middle West, Kansas in particular, the Wilson clan. So some of the historical research that he did was quite remarkable. And like I say, it really, the whole book, the point of the whole book, I mean, it called for this type of research because he was talking about an American experience seen through the lens of the Wilson family and the Beach Boys band. So that's what made it different for me. And the many, many peripheral things that he touched on that were players in the Beach Boys orbit during their run in the 60s. The title says it all, The California Experience. I think that the entire Southern California thing in the 60s was captured magnificently by White, and his research really helped set the table in the early pages for his story going forward. Quite remarkable.
One of the things that I found actually quite fascinating from your review was sort of the analysis of the Murray-Wilson factor. And there's a couple of just fascinating quotes here. You mentioned these in the review. Murray's inability to see the boys' success through their excited eyes sabotaged many of the professional glories he had once assured the boys they would find so gratifying when they achieved popular recognition. And there's another really telling quote here about, in terms of the Wilson family, the legacy of pain. So can you perhaps take us through a little bit, because it's also mention of Murray's own father.
Well, one thing that's fascinated me in my adventures in the vintage leisure world is the painful sort of realization that there are so many generational things, negative things that are handed down to sons and to children. And when you think about the way people were raised in the end of the 19th century and early in the 20th century, once you dig into that a little bit, you realize it's a wonder that anybody turned out normal. I mean, there are a lot of harsh realities of life. The children of parents of the Depression, it's hard to get your head around what they went through. Love in the home and hugging and happiness and joy, you can't be too surprised to hear that perhaps it was a rarity. So Timothy White, once he researches Murray's lineage, it's there. It's there in obvious terms that down through the years, happiness and joy and contentment in life was going to be hard to come by, because hard to break that cycle. So once he discovered Murray's father's issues and the family issues, the drama that was involved with people even leaving Kansas from the get-go and abandonment issues and the wives that were made to suffer, you know, train travel and living on beaches in tents. And so Murray is a man that finds himself with three sons. I mean, the idea that he is going to be gentle and caring is just out the window. The legacy of pain thing just nails it perfectly, because that's what it is. I mean, I was pleased that he wasn't afraid to mention some positive things about Murray, but the deal was, in that quote that you referenced, the first one, it was going to be almost impossible for them to be content, for them to look around in the first blushes of success and say, dang, everything is perfect, let's sit back and enjoy this. No, discontent, unfortunately, ran through the family, starting with even before Murray. Like, he's quite a villainous figure, but we have to consider where he came from and what tools he was given to be a father and a loving husband and a man. It was going to be a tough slog, and it's borne out through the lives of his sons.
It's interesting when you look at some of Brian Wilson's commentary on his father, and certainly in places, Brian seems to be a little softer and more sympathetic in print than during interviews. In an interview in the David Leaf documentary, Beautiful Dreamer, Brian Wilson and the Story of Smile, Brian described his father as hostile, messed up, and with a lot of hatred. But as you mentioned in your review as well, Timothy White did mention some of, you know, Murray's good work in terms of promoting the band and getting it all together. Yes. But it must have been an incredibly difficult situation. David Marks, for instance, in an interview, recalled his father actually breaking up a full-on fist fight between Murray and Dennis when Dennis was a teenager. So, yeah, it's just quite incredible to think about what sort of domestic environment that must have been.
Yeah, and it's too easy, the same actually with Colonel Tom Parker, it's too easy to get the broad brush stroke out and say there's too much evidence. Murray was a monster. Murray wrecked this and Murray wrecked that. But that is what that is unrealistic. That's not real life. I mean, Murray was a human being, a man, a father. He had been a son. So there was, I'm sure, a lot of things and a lot of hard work that he did that were positive. And I like to think there was love somewhere in Murray for his children. But again, like I say, that era and being raised in the era that he was raised in, it wasn't going to be a big demonstrative, let's hug this out sort of environment. So, but there's a balance you have to strike. And Brian, it's interesting, I Just Wasn't Made for These Time documentary, Brian gets into detail describing even the sounds Murray would make when he was disciplining the children. A real serious grunting, whipping machine Murray turned into. So is that the only thing about Murray? No, there was other things. So Brian is gentle in some aspects when he talks. And I never forget seeing in an American band, the press conference after Dennis died, Brian was there and he references his father dying 10 years previous. And he reassessed his father. And of course, once your father dies, you look at things a little bit differently. And there's always the connection that a child is going to have for a parent, no matter what the parent's like. So there's a reality and truth that Brian often talks about. My dad beat us. He was really angry and filled with rage. And that's true. But there are going to be other times when Brian says, yeah, but, you know, my dad, I mean, I've even heard Dennis saying in the early days, he worked hard for us. He was, you know, the kids, think about how young they were. They had to have somebody looking out for them. And that was Murray. So it bears much discussion. It's funny, his record was called The Many Moods of Murray Wilson. There's a lot of side to Murray, and it bears discussion, and it's interesting, and he's not to be discarded as just a monster, that's for sure.
So what did we learn from The Nearest Faraway Place about California in the 60s, in those days of the music and ascent of the Beach Boys?
Well, interesting, you know, I remember Kerouac saying it was the fantastic end of America. It wherever you lived in the States, if you went westward, that was your destination. So I love how White builds his book around the westward migration and the California, Southern California area, the weather he talks about a lot, just the whole land of promise that it was. The Beach Boys, a thing that was really interesting to me was the concept, the idea that music could be made in your garage, music could be made by a family. The business at the time was maybe more New York-based, Brill Building. We write the song here, we arrange it, we send out the demo. It's all very meticulously handled by quote-unquote professional people, business people in suits in the buildings with an eye to a buck and with the eye to fads and all that. But here comes, first of all, Ricky Nelson. It was interesting to hear White pinpoint Ricky Nelson being the spearhead of the whole, right from Hollywood High. Sure, he had the pedigree of his family, but he plugged in, covered a couple of songs, and had hit after hit after hit. And then the interesting Phil Spector aspect where he begins to build his own empire and do it himself, hire local people, and it's grassroots stuff. And then he hits on Jan and Dean. The tape recorder in the garage thing. Jan and Dean did that themselves too. even before the Beach Boys began to do it. So the Beach Boys, the famous story about converting the garage into the music room and Brian experimenting with his tape recorder, you know, the family goes away for the weekend and the boys hang out and they make music. And this whole idea that White puts forward that this started the new thing, the California sound, but also the California business, the idea that you could make it yourself, shop it around, and have a hit. The whole Phil Spector, Beach Boys, Jan and Dean thing was fascinating. And it made me consider, yeah, that's interesting that the business began to pivot and this whole California sound and scene began to emerge. And the Beach Boys were there right at the beginning of it. I thought that was fascinating.
Podcast terms and conditions can be found at our website, deck4podcast.com. You can contact us there or on our social media. Find us on the major podcasting platforms, and we're also on Substack, Facebook, Tumblr, and Instagram. This has been George Fairbrother. Thanks for listening.